Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Welcome to Prosperity for God's People, brought to you by ChristianTraders.com, the Internet's fastest growing Christian investment community, created just for you, the Christian investor.
Everybody's happy.
Striving for excellence in Christian talk radio, excellence in the world financial markets, and most of all, excellence in your personal walk with God.
Broadcasting live
from the CFRN studios in beautiful downtown Phoenix, Arizona.
Good afternoon, friends, and welcome back. Today is Wednesday. It is the 23rd day of March, 2011. Quick look at the numbers. The Dow is down about 5 points on the session. S&P is down a little over 4. The comp is off just over 5. Had some negative news this morning on the new home sales front. Significantly lower than expected. But then, that really wasn't unexpected, was it? At least, think about it. Okay. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
Mr. Ringtone.
It was, the housing was down, what? They were expecting 288, and it's down at 250, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, you know, you can buy a house cheaper than you can build a house, and so it's hard for new homes to be competitive with all of the existing inventory on the market. So for those numbers to be, I mean, until the inventory situation turns around, those numbers are going to be poor. And the month that we get a good number prior to the adjustment, then that's just an anomaly, and I don't think people should look at that as any signs of the green shoot recovery. It's just, you know, it is what it is. All right. And here's what it is. You know, let's try to look at the positive. It is one of the greatest times in the history of America for anyone from a young family just starting out to a retired couple to buy a home. Prices are low, interest rates are low. I understand you need credit. You got to be able to qualify for a loan. And that's not quite as easy today as it was a few years ago. But if you can qualify, if you do have good credit, you can buy a lot of house for the money. And as we discussed earlier this morning in the live trading room, you can pay it off in 15 years. There's talk of doing away with the 30-year mortgage, which I've always thought was just an abomination, but it did allow people to afford homes, but kind of tricked people, because the same people that could afford it with a 30-year, if somebody had set them down and schooled them a little bit, they would have understood. I mean, the scales would have just fell off their eyes, and they're like, oh my God, you're kidding. for this much more a month, I can own this thing in 15 years while I'm still young enough to enjoy it. Oh my goodness. Before my kid graduates high school, I can own my home? Really? For only $172.38 more per month? Really? Yeah, they never tell you that. See? And it's shameful. When interest rates were 10%, a $100,000 home ended up costing you $300,000 by the time you finished paying off the mortgage. So, those are some rough numbers, and we're not at 10% today. We're at a much better interest rate, so that much more reason that you can get more house for less money and pay it off. Man, you might even pay that thing off in 7-8 years. If you're still employed, if you still have a good job, I mean, buy two while you're at it, you know? Come on, be a landlord. You can do it. All right, let's look at the weekly trading zones we've encountered so far this week in trading. Monday and Tuesday, it was pretty easy. 1294/1295. Tuesday, it was pretty easy. 1294/1295. It was like stepping in bubble gum on the sidewalk. Once you got it on your shoe, you just couldn't get rid of it. And then, we tweeted a trade last night, and that tweet said you might consider shorting 1286 on a stop, which took you down to 1283.25. So that worked out to what, about 2.75 points profit potential. Now we knew that that was a close call because we're running right into the zone. And look what happened when we finally got to the zone. And I said on the show yesterday, by tomorrow we'll have either gone back to here or we'll get to here. And that's not being clairvoyant. That's just common sense. Market's got to go somewhere. And so here's where it went for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 hours. And then as we head into the London Open, off she goes. Runs right back to that 1294, 1295 area. Except this time, don't quite get there. Miss it by a couple ticks. Looks like the high here was 1295. Is there a hot spot, Michael, a certain place you hover to guarantee the appearance of the tooltip? Michael. He's an important guy. He's got a lot of stuff going on over there. Okay. All right. We'll let it go. It's not going to tell
right.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Is there a sweet spot on this candle that will guarantee the appearance of a tooltip?
On the candle itself? Hang on a second. I have all my tooltips. I have all my tooltips shut off.
I know. And then when you want one, you can't get one. Anyway, we missed it by a couple ticks. That's all. Not a big idea. Not a big idea. Not a big deal.
Not a big deal.
All right. And so then, we know the rest of the story. The market sold off. So let's get an idea of where that leaves us. That leaves us right there. Okay. We traded down through the zone, reaching for the 77.78. Unable to get there on the first attempt. We pulled back to the 84.85. And we've got 16 minutes left in this hourly candle. And as you can see, the potential for us to close below the 84.85 is possible. Okay. If we rally, this trend line here may provide some resistance. But right now, it's all about this 84.85 area. What's going to happen? Let's go look at our sentiment indicator. Where is that? Yesterday, we were dealing with the 1290 area. This area right here. And we said any significant closes, trades below 1290 will get this market into a bearish sentiment. relative to a 7-minute intraday only no Globex action chart, which is what this is. And that's what happened. Early on in the day, you can see the tails below this red line on my chart. You can see the tails below there. We talked about this on the show yesterday afternoon. Then we got back above just a little bit, and then finally going into the close, we broke below it. And then on the pullback, it held, and on the pullback, it held, and the rest, you know the rest of the story. And here we are. So what would it take for this thing to get out of trouble? Well, we would need to trade above 1286 and hold it. Now, yesterday, the number we were using when Mike Reed was on the show was 1288. 1288 was kind of a make-or-break line. And as you can see here, that if we got back above 1288, that would definitely give the market a bullish tempo. Okay? That's not what's happening right here. But just keep in mind that this 1286 area, this whole 1286, 1288 market could pull up here, you know, get tired, get hung up in the zone. It's 85.86, 84.85 area. Might consolidate sideways, connect with this trend line, and then drop. Personally, I look for lower prices into the end of the week. I don't know how that ties in with what David is forecasting, bigger picture. When he comes on in a minute, we'll be sure to get the skinny on that. Here's what the same scenario I just showed you looks like on a 30-minute chart. Okay. Here's Sunday night, bullish cross. Once this bullish cross takes place on the 30-minute chart, and the cross is right in the zone, 77/78. The market makes a beeline to that 94.95 area that we've not been able to escape. Little bearish cross here that goes nowhere. And this bullish cross, you know, we take out this high by a tick. Then on the way down, pretty good action here. You can sell the pullback to the BBC again and again and again and again till you bottom out in the 84.85. On this bullish cross here, you gotta go, you know. I'm not too crazy about trading this for a goal beyond 94.95. And that would have been smart thinking. Dynamic resistance printed right here at 1293.75. Okay? And since that dynamic resistance printed on the 30-minute chart, look where the market's gone. Now, where could you have realistically gotten in on that trade? Okay? 1292, because the signal fired off here at 93.75, so it's a 30-minute chart. Maybe you want to wait, maybe you want to see. Okay, you get in at 92. Now, this is a 30-minute chart, so it's difficult to trade a 30-minute chart and only risk 2 points. You can. You can do that. In fact, we have examples of where you could do that all across here and across here. When you're buying and selling at or inside that 1 point range, okay, it's still tough. But had you been short at 92, knowing that your risk is to the dynamic resistance, more importantly, the weekly trading zone, even more importantly, this previous swing high, okay? Some people do not want to embrace that much risk. And that's understandable, and I'm not encouraging you to do so or saying that you should. You know, or hopefully you're on the way to learning what kind of a trader you are and what type of risk you are comfortable with. But once that dynamic resistance printed, okay, your risk was definable. Definable to there. Are you willing to accept that much risk? Only you can answer that question. Now, if you're willing to shoulder that risk, what's the potential reward? Well, at least are there, and we can see it moved about three times what you would have had to risk in order to participate in that trade. Do they all lay out like that? Nope. This one did. I'm just pointing it out. So, dynamic resistance there. Dynamic support here. Okay. Prices pulled back to the zone, to the BBC. What we're waiting on now. Is we are waiting for dynamic resistance. Resistance, support. Now we want to see resistance print. If resistance were to print here, that would be a gift. Because you've got the BBC, you've got the zone. If you could get some dynamic resistance here, that would be huge. And I'll point out that over here, when this resistance printed, you were also at the zone, also at previous resistance. Over here, we printed right at the zone. So that's a resistance area. That's like double X, times two, concentrated, however you want to look at it. Now you got two things telling you, this is a pretty good turning point up here. I don't want to use the term turning point, but a good place to find resistance, both fixed and dynamic. Okay. All right, so we watch this, see what happens. Let's go to the 10K. Can we read anything else into that? Let's get rid of this from yesterday. This morning, Michael, when I had you bring up your 10K and I talked to you about the two dojis that I had on my chart, and yours had printed a little differently because, folks, when you run a 10K chart or 2100 tick chart, anything other than a time-based chart, it's probably not going to match up identically with our chart. The reason being is because when you fire up your charts, it starts counting. Okay? And if it starts counting at a different time, then if I opened up two computers side by side, a second apart, I fire up these charts, and then identical platform, I fire up these charts, they're going to be really, really close, but they're going to be a little bit off. And the longer I let them run, the farther they'll get off. I don't know if that makes sense to you. It has to do with the butterfly effect. I'll explain that in another episode. Or I think I explained it in a previous episode. Okay. So, we had the doji here. Market turns down. Pull back, doji down. And then we get the double doji. And the market turns up. And runs right back to the zone. So, when you get the double doji and a break of this trend line, and you get a bullish cross, and you've got dynamic support, it's pretty, that's, you know, only the only issue was that overhead, you know, just 2 points away, you've got this 84.85 area, which could act as resistance. And what did it do? It acted as resistance. However, we've now printed dynamic support, and we are trying to push our way through it. But look at our cycle indicator. The cycle indicator would lead us to believe that this thing has the potential to run out of energy in here and head back down, okay, for a test of the zone and or this area. So we'll just watch it. You can see it's starting to turn back up a little bit because price has moved up here. If we look left, the swing high is right here. And that's where we're at. We're right at that previous swing high. So until that swing high gets taken out, nothing's changed.
Close above that swing high.
A close above the swing high, that might be something. That might get you out of the Vegematic.
And we have been in the Vegematic.
Vegematic.
Way too much.
All right, Michael, what can you add to all of this?
To all of this, Bernanke is speaking right now. I don't know if you mentioned that. And that also adds to the Vegematic. We just closed up above there. We just closed up above that level.
Yes, we did.
And he seems to be moving up pretty strongly here.
That's a good point. He's speaking right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He started at 12, I believe. 12 my time. And across the board, it looks like things are suddenly starting to move. Yeah.
Maybe he's saying something
significant. I'm looking. Gold is up $10. Silver's up 65 cents. Grains are all down.
Won't you listen what the Fed said?
So far, many of the largest networks have announced that they will be managing a tiered fee system, and to the extent that that happens, that will help differentiate the fees received by the smaller and the larger issuers. The second part of the law, though, relates to the networks that merchants use to put through their debit charges. And in particular, it creates more competition.
Okay.
So the merchants will have more choices about which way they want to route their transactions.
All right. Well, we won't. Anybody that wants to watch that, I'm sure you have a TV in your own home and you can watch that. Or you can watch it live on the Internet. Yeah, Lynn, I don't think you lost sound. It was just I had that thing cranked all the way open, and it just didn't have a lot of audio to it. All right, this thing's marching. Okay, there it goes.
Yes, it is. Moving up. So right after the close up above that level.
Yeah, let's see what we got on the YM. I had...
YM's moving up.
Once we got this bullish cross, the pullback held. Now here's an example of how long the cycle can stay in an overbought or oversold area. Okay. This has been a good hour now. And here, okay, it turned red, but it never hooked down. The hook down is really important because, well, that's self-explanatory. All right, so market spiking higher. They like something Bernanke is saying, perhaps. Or they're liking something he's not saying.
Yeah.
Okay, we just printed dynamic resistance.
Dynamic resistance, and that was on your 500 contract.
Yep, and we also printed it on the 6-tick range. 11,978.
Yep, I have it.
And on the 500, we should be turning down here. So I'm going to watch this 11,970. We're going to go to David here in just a minute. I'm going to continue to watch this 11,978. Again, Bernanke speaking. Perhaps not a good time to be putting on or taking off trades. But if the setup presents itself, I may attempt to get short against this area here on the YM, the 11,978. Not putting the trade on yet. Kind of a parabolic move up. So we're going to just watch that. And we'll see how strong a defense that may be. As you can see, the support here held very nicely on the pullback. And it ran from 37 to 77. It's a 40-point move right there. 4 ES points equivalent. See how we're flattening out right here? Okay. Price has not gotten below the MA1 cycle. Let's go. I'm more interested in the cycle over here. I want to see some weakness. I want to see this thing hooked down over here. But if we are even to take action against this as a potential area to be short, if we were to decide, we have to keep in mind that this area right here if you're short at 78, you need to be considering covering that by 58. And so far I have nothing here to put me into this trade. So I'm just going to watch it. All right, anything else you want to add, Michael, or we'll go to David?
No, let's bring David on.
Okay. Let it be done.
Good morning, Dwayne.
Good morning, David.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, David.
How are you doing?
I am all right so far. How are you?
I'm fine. Just right with you here watching markets.
Good.
And
that is good.
Trying to put a trade together, you know?
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm with you. We're waiting here now. We're waiting for an opportunity to enter this move. It's been pretty choppy all morning.
Yeah, we've gone into a little bit of a quieter phase, but this is a nice directional little move up here. It's nice to see it. I think somebody was saying that Ben Bernanke is speaking.
He is right now.
Wouldn't it be nice to be important enough that you just, you know, speak and the markets move? I'm not sure I'd like that. Actually, I mean, you'd still have to be guessing which direction it's going to move. You might know you can move the market, but you still may not know which direction it's going to go.
Right.
So that's always a
not knowing which way it's going to go. You know, you're important enough to move the market, but you know, your opinion is
you're left in the same position as the little people, which is that you know it's going to move, but you just don't know which way. Leona Helmsley's little people.
Yeah, the little people.
The little people.
Only the little people pay taxes.
That's
didn't
right.
she
just
leave?
The
didn't
people.
She leave her money to her dog? Wasn't that how that story ended?
She did. Had you noticed that as people either get tremendous success in one way or the other, or tremendously wealthy, they get batty a lot of the times, like movie stars. You know, as soon as they have big success, they, you know, they're all in drug rehab. They all have 2-month relationships that die and burn. They get married 15 times, and yet they have everything that supposedly everybody wants, and it just destroys them.
That should be a real eye opener
for what you wish for.
For people that these things that you chase, that, you know, whatever it is that you say, I would be happy if it's not you're fooling yourself.
Yeah,
I'd be happy if I had this, if I could do that, if I could live over there, if this woman liked me, or if this man liked me, or if I had this many children, or whatever it is.
I'd be happy if your phone would stop ringing. Would that be something? Is that legitimate?
I don't know. Michael, do you have a mute on that thing? Or?
That's no, my
just playing.
I don't have
a just playing.
I'm sure that there is,
it's
don't
all right. I'm just joking around.
I'll give you my wife's number. You can call her and tell her to stop texting me.
Oh, that's very nice of her. If that's your wife, then we let you off the hook. That's very nice that your wife is texting you.
Hey, Bob asked a legitimate question, and I'm going to just... I don't know the answer, Bob, but Lynn says, at least change the tune. Bob says, is Bernanke allowed to buy or sell stocks right before he speaks? You know, Bob, I'm sure there's some law in the book somewhere that says he can't.
Yeah, I would think that's probably true. I don't
know.
Can
his third cousin twice
is.
Removed in the Dominican Republic buy or sell stocks before he speaks? Yeah, I don't know. I would think not. I think you would have to be very, very careful about... Yeah, that's another thing. You know, he's a human being, too. He gets invited to dinners and cocktail parties and birthday parties and bar mitzvahs and baptisms and all kinds of things. And don't you think everybody on the planet is always trying to get something out of him so that they can go, you know, turn it into a dollar?
Sure.
And he's got to be... I can tell he's got a cocktail... No comment. Well, what do you think about the Suns? You think they can win this year? No comment. No?
Yeah. Do you know where you park your car? No comment. Can I get you another drink? No comment. Do you need to know where the restroom is? No comment.
Yeah. Well, now, Alan just made an interesting comment, and I didn't know this, Alan. There are no insider trading laws for members of Congress.
Isn't that interesting?
Big
the
surprise.
Little people, we have the insider trading laws. We go to jail if we break them, like Martha Stewart. But somehow they remain free, unencumbered by those little pesky laws that we have to stay under. So they can just trade. That's how all these people get so bloody rich. Have you ever wondered how the, you know, a guy is living out of a shoebox, he becomes a politician, and then he owns half the state later? Well, you know, like Harry Reid said, well, you know, just prudent investments along the way. Yeah, you're like the richest man in Nevada over Steve Wynn and Carl, you know, all these other people that own whole hotels and have an income stream. He's richer than those people.
Yeah, let me hand out the state contracts. I'll have more money than Tony Soprano in no time.
There you are. That is interesting. So they don't, if that really is the case, that they don't, they're not covered by the insider trading laws, then that just answered one of my long-standing questions right there, other than what is one-hour Martinizing, you know, some of my other questions, which is how does just some schlum politician always end up with so much money when he has, like, you know, he makes $103,000 a year salary or whatever it is, you know, for doing his job, and yet he's now worth $66 million 3.5 years later. How does that work?
Well, you know, there's a new TV show, and I know I bring up TV shows an awful lot, but it's called Chicago 187. No, I'm sorry, wrong. That's Detroit 187. That's another show. We'll talk about that show tomorrow. Today we'll talk about the Chicago Code. It's about the police force in Chicago, no surprise, and how corrupt the political machine is in Chicago. And how this young lady, this police superintendent, Teresa, is, you know, going to clean everything up. The most powerful man in the city is an alderman. And I'm sure somebody in the audience, yes, DJ says, great show. It really is an interesting show. This guy, he's an alderman. And an alderman is like, in Phoenix, we have city council members. And they have like a wee bit of power, you know. I mean, they can do some things, but in Chicago, an alderman, he's based on the way this show's written, and I think it's loosely wrapped around the truth. He has more power. You should watch the show, and you have to go. Is this how it really is? And this guy is filthy rich. He gets to hand out all the city building contracts. He awards to this one. He awards to that one. And even the police commissioner, she has to come and fetch and step in front of this alderman, who is really, it's just a fancy name for a city council member. But he's like the senior guy for his ward, and he runs it. And the whole plot of the story is that she's trying to take this guy down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be very difficult to do because of the sophistication of the corruption machine in Chicago. So she's out to take him down, but in the meantime, she's got to play nice in front of him or else she can't get anything done because, again, he controls the city. So I think that's a microcosm of what we see on a national level with the Senate and Congress and the unfettered power that so many of these guys have. And you know what? If one of my school teachers had helped me to understand, as a very bright young man before I went south that if I would just get my act together, go to college, get elected to one term of Congress, that I could kick back and draw a paycheck and have full medical for the rest of my life, you know, my life might have turned out different. I didn't know that gravy train was available.
But instead, here we are trying to call all the turns in the S&P 500. We really fell from grace, I'll tell you. You know, it could have been a lot better. You know, we've got Michael Bork's phone going off. We've got, you know, I'm just playing with you, Michael, there. It's your wife texting, and I appreciate that. I'm glad your wife is texting you.
There's a whole movie there where I go and hunt down my high school guidance counselor. Why didn't you tell me?
Right. All right. Well, let's do our little job as long as we still have it.
And as long as Alderman Gibbons doesn't object. Just we don't want to cross that line.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, I don't know where we should begin, but I'll just take my pick. Let's start with the S&P and take a quick look at where we are. I mentioned to you yesterday that because of the contract rollover, that the S&P PIT session, not the electronic, but the PIT session, non-Globex session, had triggered a top that was due on March 22nd, plus or minus a day. It came in one trading day early on the 21st. That's today's decline confirms that, and that's in our turning point calendar. It didn't do the same on the larger E-mini traded market, and that caused a little bit of indecision there on my part with regard to if I wanted to trade on the downside for the natural, normal moves that the market would make given that top. But today's market did decline. We are seeing, very much like what Michael said earlier, that very slow, kind of choppy behavior, and right now you know, we're seeing some firming up here very nicely.
Mm-hmm.
The market attempted to get down to 78, which is the next level down. We did hit 79 today. And I wouldn't be surprised to see the market run up and, you know, not an outright forecast, but go do 94. I wouldn't be surprised to see that in a run like this. And so, you know, there may be something to do a little bit here, either on the upside or... let's just say, again, this isn't an outright forecast, but let's just say they went up and did 94. I'd be interested in reversing off of that for a trade a little bit on the downside. So that's something
that's been a beautiful trade all week long.
Okay, there you are.
Yeah, selling 94.95. I mean, that's the market was just stuck there Monday,
mm-hmm.
yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Hit it again on the overnight. Didn't quite get there on the overnight. Missed it by a couple ticks.
Yeah. So we have that underway right now. That again, that's not a forecast for 94. I'm just saying that's just one of the things that I would
I agree with you. If that got up there, I think it would be difficult. It would be one of those situations where it would be hard not to sell it.
And that's when you're supposed to trade. That's the David Williams method of trading. Is it's hard not to. Not it's easy to, but it's hard not to. Or, you know, the other side of that is where you turn something that isn't really a trade into a trade just because you want to get busy in the markets, et cetera. So anyway, so that's number one. So we have a daily top that the market's reversed off of, and that's helpful now that we've seen that, because that tells us, that reveals a little bit more of the truth of where we are in the market. For people who, I'm assuming there may be a new person there, the larger outlook has been for a quarterly top for the first quarter of this year, and then inside that for February to mark an important top for a larger decline of 115 points. We've got down to about 96 or 97, something like that. I haven't added it exactly. But normally we would see further decline after this bounce is done. This bounce, this larger bounce, is a result of the week of March 14th reflected wave or forecast weekly bottom. And so we would normally expect a multi-week advance or sideways to up from there. So how the market handles this particular advance then would be important. This is what we would consider to be very important, how they handle this. In our report on the weekend, before this advance had actually, well, let me double check my dates here because I'm a little lost on time. Okay, so 21st was the first day of this week. So basically, over the weekend, we had forecast when the market was down at 1272 that the first important place on the upside for selling territory would be $52 to $55 above the low. And if you take a look at the low at 43 and add 52 to it, it brings you to 95.96. If you go down to the Globex low that we made on the 16th, that's like 41. If you add, you know, 55 to that, we said 52 to 55 for that reason, it would go to 96. You can see the high of this week so far has been 96.25. There's a very important spatial relationship reason why we put that in the report, that the first important spot on the upside for potential selling territory would be $52 to $55 up. Number one, it's $52 to $55 because the Globex had made a lower low than the pit session at 41. The pit session was at 43. And so that covers two or three of those extra points, you know, that range between 52 and 55 there. So the market did go up and did do the 96. I think some people might have expected some higher from that, but there should be an initial reaction from that level, and we're underway in that reaction now. So basically, that's about it. Other than intraday setups, which there are some even right now, which we haven't messaged out yet, other than intraday setups, that's basically for us the bigger picture. Multi-week sideways to up off of the March 14th bottom and initial test of 96, which was in the report and has been completed. And now we just wait patiently here for something to do. This hour is an important hour for today is with regard to turning points. So I don't have a lot more than that just right now to say, but this is something that's why I'm saying that if we were to get to some critical level, this would be important. I wouldn't even mind, honestly, selling against 90 if we get up there, but let's give them a little time here, you know, to see how they handle this advance that they're in right now. But just keep in mind that this current hour for today, the fourth hour, is pretty important, and we're in the fourth hour right now. So yeah, this would be a reversal, tradable reversal, a little bit later today. With regard to the S&P, I think that's everything that I have right now. We're just watching the bigger picture unfold, and then, you know, we're going to tie in some smaller trades, which we've already had one today, and see if we can do something with this a little bit later in the morning here, or the afternoon, either one. So, let's see. Do you want to move on to some other markets? We had one of your listeners yesterday was... it may have been Alan, and forgive me if I have the names wrong because I'm not 100% sure who it was, but somebody was going to take a trade off of the euro, which we had been we had forecast recently that the, and this is a trade that I didn't take in the euro. This is one of those trades where you say to yourself, I wish I would have taken that trade. Great, you know, great move, great call, but I in fact didn't take it. And that was the...
Alan says that he did take it.
Okay, beautiful. March 16th bottom would normally advance up to, from that bottom, an initial move up to about 140, 50-something, and then finally, the final target was 142.22. And that would be due into March 22nd. So from March 16th to March 22nd, the market did, in fact, advance that. That's about $3.74 worth of movement that we were forecasting. 374 times, I forgot what it is. Is it 1250 or is it 11 or whatever it is?
1250.
That's quite a move. That's a $4,600 per contract move in the euro. Then yesterday we had mentioned and messaged to Bert that, the 22nd was certainly going to be a top for an initial decline of 94 cents. And that would take us down to, let me get my calculator here, because these numbers still slow me down a little bit. that would take us down to 140-135, which was the initial downside target, a for sure target. That's a sure trade to target. And then with the possibility of continuing down for another decline to 140-41 or so. Now, today they've gotten down to 140-81, so about 40 ticks off of that. But really, a nice move down and further confirmation that we, I can say with confidence that we have correctly identified what the, all the various elements of the Euro is, the June Euro is, with regard to spatial relationship forecasting. So I'm hoping Alan got some gains out of this and that those targets or that the whole setup was useful to him. I love to hear when somebody takes a trade and, you know, manages it down and trades it to whatever the number is. Sometimes you'll find it's very difficult, you know, no matter how many times you see your own work be correct or see somebody else's work be correct. It really seems to make no difference if you're of a mindset to be nervous in a trade. It's, it all goes away, you know, as soon as you get in a trade. Suddenly it doesn't matter what the target is. As soon as they give you a few ticks, you know, you want to run and take your profit. But really, over time, if you practice, you can learn to hold and trade with more confidence towards these targets and your own targets included. But in this particular case, whoever gives them to you, if you get used to it and get past your psychology, you can actually learn to hold for some of these at least initial targets, which still were a decent amount of money, hopefully to be made on the downside in this particular case. So we're still going to wait for a little bit further. I would like to see, you know, obviously the trade's pretty much completed with the initial target, but I would like to see how they finish this up. And then we'll have, right now we have no further trade in the Euro, so we'll move on past that.
Quick question on the Euro before we go. Was the 322, okay, March 22nd Euro FX a daily reflected wave time frame top? I recall that March 10th was the last reflected wave daily bottom.
This is a good question. This is another one of the reasons why I had confidence in this. I mean, you know, if I say something on the radio program, I must have some confidence in it. But one of the things I did like about this trade is that, similar to the March 10th forecast, which was the original one of the original forecasts that we had made in this market, we had both spatial relationships and reflected wave coming together on a particular turning point. So the answer is yes. The date for this was actually the 21st in reflected wave, and then it went to spike slightly higher, completed the 142.22 target on the 22nd. So there was very, very high certainty that we would see 94 cents off that minimum, and then we've completed everything but the last 40 cents or so of not cents, but ticks, whatever they are, in that market on the downside. So I do like to see that. It's one of the things that helps me to hold on to a position for a bigger swing and to actually take the trade, is when I see multiple things coming together, different ideas, you know, different methodology. We've talked about this several times. And so we definitely have that in the Euro. And for people who are at the Reflected Wave Seminar, which is just around the corner, it's just 2-3 days away now, we'll go over this and I'll show you, for those of you in the audience that might be coming to it, you'll see why March 10th and why March 21st were listed as tops and bottoms in reflected wave. You'll see exactly why, and you'll know, just like we talk about in it, that you could have called those yourself without consulting me in the least. It wouldn't require me in any way, shape, or form for you to make the exact same call for a bottom on March 10th, 11th, and a top on March 21st, 22nd. So the answer is yes, that that definitely was of the same type. You'll notice when you look at a series of reflected wave tops and bottoms that there are almost always unique numbers of days or time between those tops and bottoms. You could drive yourself crazy trying to figure out a sequence that, you know, the mysterious sequence that's
mm-hmm.
running, if there is such a thing,
mm-hmm.
between these tops and bottoms. In this particular case, if you counted from, let's just call it the actual bottom on March 11th, to, you know, the top that we just made, that's 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
But nowhere in this market is it obvious that there's a 7 day cycle running that I can see. and yet the next reflected wave turning point in that market will almost certainly have nothing to do with the 7 day movement from this top. So, excuse me about my throat today. Anyway, so it's a completely different principle. That's one of the things that's so beautiful about it, is that it doesn't rely on cycle counting, bar counting, mirrors, you know, delta, many, many other different kinds of Fibonacci extensions, you know, ad nauseum. You can see this as quickly as I can, and it's very, very easy to know where the turns are going to be in the future without having to do that calculation at all.
Now, you said that you're going to offer the people who attend your seminar some one-on-one time via the internet after the seminar.
That's correct. If they're nice to me during the seminar, and I'll make that determination at the time. Please, go ahead.
Go ahead. I guess my question was how necessary, because you've made it just sound so doggone simple.
Well, it doesn't matter how doggone simple it is. People are going to go home, and they're going to sit down with their computers. They're going to look at their notes, and they're going to have a question. They're going to have questions. At some point, they're going to say, now, did he say this or that, or did I get this right, or am I doing this right, or any number of things. It's not that they have to manipulate something or calculate something that they're going to get wrong, but there are some rules that I lay out in how to use reflected wave. Maybe they have questions. I'm leaving it open for them, if they want to have some time personally with me to help them understand anything that they may misunderstand. So it's not that I'm expecting people to, you know, flood me with requests for that. I wanted to give that as an opportunity, though, because honestly, when I'm somewhere and I learn something, and in a way I kind of think I'm a bit of a slow learner initially, because for some reason I have a little trouble getting it in my head, or I'm not thinking about it the right way, and then I think I get it, but I still may have a question later. I want to give those guys the opportunity to contact me and have that, and not just over the phone, but through the webinars, through something similar that you're doing. So I'm not giving it because I truly believe that everybody is going to need it, but I'm offering it to them because these people are putting good faith in me, and I want to have them know that when we're done with the seminar, they still can get questions answered, and we can get right on to a live screen, and we can, whatever their question is, you know, I can straighten them out with it. So it's just an offer for people. I don't expect a lot of people to actually need it. I've said before, most of the people probably coming to the seminar have been through many, many different types of techniques. They've bought a lot of different things over time. They've been around the block, and they'll be able to put this together very quickly. So I'm not expecting a lot of that.
Okay. Just curious.
I hope that answers your question. okay, let's move on to the crude oil market. This is something,
you know, I guess part of the reason that I let me just say this, and then we'll definitely
please
move on. The reason I ask that is because the dynamic today, Wednesday, and the dynamic when we're talking about all of this next Wednesday will be very much different.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. it will be after the fact. And so there will be people who will be able to go, yeah, I saw that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They can't
mm-hmm.
tell anybody about it, but they'll be able to. So anyway, yeah.
No, absolutely. This is the real deal. You'll be able to call tops and bottoms, period. That's the deal. You come to the seminar, and you're going to know how to call tops and bottoms. And I'm going to prove it at the seminar with over 600 recent turning points from all kinds of markets, all kinds of time frames, stocks, commodities, strange indices that you haven't even heard of before. And it wasn't designed to work on those, but once you know the conditions that it does work on those, you can put together some really killer trades. And what I like to do, and I think a lot of people who are coming to this are going to do, is they're going to continue using their own understanding, of course, of the market, and then they're going to blend this in. And there's a lot of exciting ways to do that. I'm telling you, it's going to be really exciting. You're gonna, for those of you who are coming, you're gonna see 100 different ways to put this to work. I'm going to show you many of the ways that I use it in my own trading, but everybody has their own avenues and own risk tolerance and all that stuff. There's just a lot of neat things you can do with it. Day one, we're going to go over the main technique and show the proof of how that it actually does work, and you'll see time and time again exactly doing the same thing over and again. On Sunday, we're going to talk a little bit more about the more in-depth things you can do, and this would relate to some of the questions that they may have later. As an example, stacking time frames, which allows you to actually use reflected wave as a this is nothing I've advertised, but I've mentioned this before. It actually relates to price, meaning that this is a timing method, but there's something you can do with it that will give you a very impressive trade to targets. We're going to go over that on Sunday as well. So just a lot of stuff. So, I mean, I'm excited about it. You know, we know this, Duane. We struggled. You asked me about this for years on the program. I struggled with it, and, you know, we finally decided to do it. Now that we've decided to do it, I can hardly wait. I'm just as excited probably as people that are coming to it, because I've decided, you know, I fought back and forth, and I decided to finally do it. This really is something that means a lot to me. It has meant a lot to me. I didn't do it for 15 years. I kept it a secret. The people I originally trained with it beautifully kept it a secret. It wasn't on the internet anywhere. And, you know, after making the decision and doing all that, I'm very excited to go over it and, you know, raise the bar, because a bunch of people now are going to know, or a relatively small group are going to know a whole lot more about the nature of the market and how to tie together this technique with their own outlook of the market. And I'm excited to see the looks on their faces. And, you know, I'm just picturing a few minutes after we start, they're already chasing me down the hallway with pitchforks and shovels. You know, the doors burst open and I'm running. Run, David! You know, the people are running after me with... I don't know why there is. It's always whenever there's a group of people together, when they all get really angry, suddenly a pitchfork and a shovel appear. Where do they get this? That's why I'm going to check that room out carefully. I'm going to see, I'm going to make sure before anybody goes in there that there aren't any pitchforks or shovels.
Torches, too. Torches are big.
Torches are good. The mad crowd always has a torch. Anyway, no, they're going to be running out of there to go back and, you know, put a trade on. So, you know, in our ad, we said skeptics invited. I really mean that. I mean, the people that, if you're skeptical of this, you'll see. I'm telling you.
Did the amazing Randy sign up?
The amazing Randy didn't sign up, but we will have a few guests there and a couple of the.
You know who he
that
is, right?
With. Yeah, of course I do.
The guy who debunks everything.
Yeah, he
Nothing's
debunks everything.
Real.
But the amazing Randy is debunking supernatural things.
Right.
This is, you know, we use the word supernatural in our ad, but that's only because it looks that way to others that don't know how to do it. I think Randy is providing a good service to people.
Nobody's been able to take his $1 million in how many years?
At one point it was 10,000, and then I think it went up, but...
Maybe it's not a million, maybe it's 100,000, but yeah.
Something. And what it was for him to say, if you can prove that there is...
Any kind
of
paranormal activity.
Any kind of paranormal thing.
Yeah. And when you think about it, I mean, I know a lot of people truly, you know, and I don't even want to get into that discussion, wholeheartedly believe in all types of paranormal, supernatural kinds of things, but the fact that that no one's been able to prove it. No one's been able to separate him from his money. I mean, I don't even like the guy. I don't want to say I don't like the guy, because I don't know the guy. He kind of annoys and aggravates me. I think I can be that honest amongst friends that he just is sort of an abrasive kind of guy. And but he still got his money. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you are.
even though there's TV shows where guys have all this sophisticated equipment and they're measuring this and that, and we got a figure over here and we can see this over there, but somehow, I don't know, maybe Randy is the same attorney, I don't know, maybe he really got you.
I don't know, that's a good one. Okay, actually let's move on
to
the T-bond market first,
right,
because this is another one. We had called for a bottom in the 30-year T-bonds, which the on-time day was March 21st. We put out a trade with Bert over at Daniel's Trading that the market would advance about 1.05, like a point and five ticks, off of that bottom as the initial target. So that low was, which is about a little over $1,000, trying to figure out what that low was. It was 120.23, so 120.23 plus 1.05 brings us to 121.28. Today, they did complete that 120.128. And to be honest with you, they went higher than that. They went to a high of 122.80, but they would. Well, wait a minute. Maybe they did complete the whole thing. I'm still struggling with.
Unfortunately,
the, no,
I don't
have
122.08.
Okay, here's the thing. We're not sure. This is a market that we're sort of practicing with. So far, the timing portion and the pricing portion has worked. But honestly, under normal, I hate to say this, under normal conditions, because there's no normal conditions for this market yet, but they went, I would have expected to see a little bit higher than the 122.08 as a final upside target for this. So we didn't quite get that, but we did get the initial move, which is a $1,000 move off of that. We had given that trade to Bert. If somebody wanted to take it, it's really just for us to test that market. So that's, at least we had that, and that's a decent little indication for us that things are okay in that market with regard to our interpretation, you know, of it. Then if you go to crude, this is the market that I've been telling people they could make enough money to just take the whole silly course with, because I said that on March 23rd, plus or minus a day, the crude oil market would start a move that would initially go up 3 points and then continue up for another three, which would bring it a total of 6,000 per contract. That's a decent, you know, that's a nice little chunk. Yesterday's, we sent this trade out, considering yesterday the one day early. I had an indication, a slight indication, that it may have come one day early. We sent this trade to Bert. For those of you, your listeners, Dwayne, who have signed up with Bert at Daniel's Trading, he'll send you these trades for free. He puts them together. We send them to him. He puts them into a nice little format and then sends them out to you. You can get them for free right now. This one trade right here is exactly what we forecast the market was going to do. It went from 102, the low was on 102.10 yesterday. We forecast it would go up an initial 3 points from that, which would be 105.10, which it did. Finish that into today. And then now, under normal conditions, we would see an attempt at the 108 level. We've gotten as high as 106.34 or so. So, and there's something important right a little bit higher than that that could block the market. But either way, it's been a great trade. This is a good example, another good indication that we have the numbers right on crude. So this is a market that I've been trading in, and I really love the volatility that this market has. So one of the things that can affect anybody's system is the lack of volatility. So you don't want to try to make the market move a big distance with no matter what technique you have if the volatility isn't present, because volatility is the very electricity by which the market's going to, you know, make these moves. So try to stay in markets that are volatile so that you can have a much higher probability of having your target or your advisor's targets get hit, because volatility is a really big component of how all this works. So anyway, that's nice to see that. Gold, we don't have anything right now just yet on gold, but gold does have the 23rd or 24th as an important date, and so we are waiting on that. I'll give something, if we have it, we'll give something out on that. And then finally, the last
trading
one.
Gold's 14.39.30
yeah,
right now.
They're up there. I don't have sugar live yet, and so yesterday we had indicated a trade. We had indicated that there was going to be a top in sugar on March 21st. And then a decline of, one moment for that, of 87 cents. I mentioned this on your show, 0.87 of a cent. So, you know, 2601 minus 0.87, that brought it down to 2514. We got to that, but I told you yesterday if they closed above 2514, roughly, that that was a stronger position and that we might do something different with sugar. So, you know, the initial target was hit on the downside. They came pretty close to the second target as well, on the downside. But this may be something that we're going to take a trade in, and we'll message that out. I don't have it right now to give because it's not quite set up for it. So if you want those, go to Burton and get those trades. So basically that's everything we've got. The biggest one, the biggest two are crude and the euro, both of which did very well. And I hope that others, maybe a few people other than Alan, got a chance to take some of that out of the crude, perhaps, because that really is a that's a really great market. It's a fabulously volatile market. You know, as long as everybody wants to kill each other in the Mideast, crude is a good oil, a good market to trade in. And everybody's wanted to kill each other in the Mideast since 5,000 years ago, since 3,000 years before the birth of Christ. All these people want to do is kill each other. That's all they do. They're born and bred to kill each other. And yet if you talk to them individually, some of them, they're warm-hearted, very kind, loving. But I'll tell you what, something's in the water out there. I don't know what it is. But that whole side of the earth, you know, someone gave up on the whole side of that. That's the whole side of the earth because they're just nuts. They want to kill everybody over everything, over land, over religious, you know, interpretation. Everybody has to die. If you don't believe like I believe, exactly like I believe, then I have to kill you. I'm sorry, I've got to kill you because you don't believe exactly like I believe in the Bible or in the Quran, excuse me. So it's a mess over there. And listen, that's one of the things, you know, we get a lot of oil from over there. So the oil market is pretty volatile right now. And of course, there's been quiet periods while the Mideast has existed in the oil market. But the volatility of the oil market is very big and very large, and that helps put these types of trades together where you can make a large amount of money in a short period of time and use risk management to protect yourself and all the other things that we talked about. So,
you got anything on silver?
Not yet. If you're talking about anything meaning really a true forecast or something, I don't. Which month are you trading in?
I'm not. One of the listeners, Bob, had asked. I think that Michael and Bert were putting on. Did you hear Bert's news?
No.
Bert's not here today. Bert's having a baby. No, actually, his wife's having the baby.
Okay.
Bert's getting the epidural. His wife's having the baby. But yeah, so he won't be here for the rest of the week.
Okay. Well, that's. I'll make sure to congratulate him.
And I was thinking we should take up a collection and send him something. And I was like, well, no, wait a minute. He's supposed to give us cigars. So
yeah,
you can have
exactly. In
Michael, are you still
market,
there? What were you guys trading on the silver yesterday? They put on a trade in the mini silver. I was not participating in that. Okay, Bob says it was the May silver.
Okay. I don't have anything set up on silver right
okay.
now except that about oh I don't know. 10 years ago, we sent a report out telling people that we were looking for a multi-year advance in both gold and silver, and I sent that report to you, Dwayne.
Hey, you.
It was an easy call. Back then, we didn't even trade in those markets back then. We didn't even have an interest in them. It just looked to me, and that's where I learned at that time about buying silver through warehouse receipt and all that stuff, which I did. And I don't still have that silver, but that was a bottom. Significantly after Warren Buffett had purchased, so he wasn't necessarily timing the market directly, and that's a good example for those people who believe that the big boys move the markets. Is Warren Buffett a big boy? Does he qualify? Anybody want to answer that?
Say that again.
Is he not a big boy?
Warren Buffett?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? People laughed at him when he bought silver at $7. They said he finally got it wrong.
Yeah, he didn't get it wrong.
No, he didn't.
It's up at 37 and it's still in.
I'll never forget. I was actually, this is back in my meat-eating days, I was sitting at Burger King eating a Whopper Jr., reading the Wall Street Journal, and they were poking fun at Warren because he had paid $7 an ounce for a ton of silver. And I literally mean a ton or tons. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this guy doesn't get it wrong too often, but I guess, you know, everybody's entitled to get it wrong once. And I happened to be very bullish on gold and silver at that time. So, you know, I was hoping they were wrong about him being wrong. But I actually remember that day, you know, it's funny how times in your life, I can close my eyes and I can be back in that Burger King right now in my head, reading that newspaper, thinking those thoughts, tasting that disgusting, greasy red meat. I can. So anyway, back to reality. Here we are. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was just saying that
was me
he's
tripping
a big player
down memory lane,
and,
guys.
Not a big player. He's an elephant. Anyway, for those of you who believe that the big boys move the market around, Warren Buffett, being the second richest man in the world, qualifies as a big boy. And he bought the market, and he bought lots and lots and lots of silver, probably well in excess of $1 billion. And it didn't turn the market. For those of you who believe the big boys move the market, for those of you who believe the guys on the floor run the stops, for those of you who believe that governments run the markets up and run them down, you're all wrong. Every last one of you are all wrong, in my opinion. Show me the evidence that that has ever happened, and I'll believe it. And I have tons of evidence that it has never happened, except in the rare instance of a corner on the market like the Hunt Brothers, which happens once in a great, great while, where a market can be cornered, so to speak. But in general, the idea that this is something that goes on all the time is nonsense. It feels good to believe it because we want to believe that there's some big power out there that just controls everything and is just running everything beautifully, even though the evidence is quite to the contrary. When Warren Buffett bought silver, this is just one of many, many examples, he bought $1 billion worth or more, and it didn't even blip the market. You can go check for yourself. The market just continued down another almost $4, almost cut his investment in half. And you know how many other people, when they heard that Warren Buffett was going to buy the market, do you know how many followers he has who believe in him? Do you have any idea how many more billions of dollars were probably put into the market because other people knew that Warren Buffett bought the silver market? It's an unfathomable amount of money that went into the silver market, and yet the silver market went straight down from where he bought it over time, went straight down, and it almost cut all of those people's investment straight in half. So you've got the second richest man in the world plus all of his followers buying as much silver as they can. People have written books about him. People, there's whole newsletters, there's whole investment groups that are based on Warren Buffett. Billions of dollars were dumped into the silver market, and it went down by half. In other words, that cut their whole investment in half. If that doesn't turn the market, then please give me the evidence that the government or other people are running the market, somehow making the market move, because that's a pretty tough one for you to overcome. And I challenge somebody to tell me how it was that that many billions of dollars could get fed into the silver market, and you got the floor guys there, you got the whole rest of the world trading in the market. How did it all continue going down if money really just straight up, just a big elephant comes in and can just move the market? Explain it to me. And you don't have to explain it today. You can think about it for a while. I've got many, many other examples of where very, very large money was put into the market. Back in the early to mid-90s, just there's another one, the Japanese yen was in a free fall. And seven, not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, but seven governments got together to try to shore up the Japanese yen. Do you consider governments a big player? Because you're always saying that it's the government that's doing this. Government's moving the market up. Government's moving the market down. Well, seven of them got together to try to get the Japanese yen to stop falling. Guess what the Japanese yen did when those seven governments got in? It had a little baby blip and then spent the next 2 years going down. How is that?
Well, I'm going to tell you how it is. It's like this.
Explain it to me.
I was there in the late 70s. Okay, I was a young man, 19 years old, out to see the world on a sailor's paycheck.
Do we need music? You need to cue the music for this one.
Which wasn't much. A bottle of beer was $5 American. One bottle was $5 American back in 1978. A steak dinner was $50 American. Now, when anything gets into what I consider, you know, the bubblicious stratosphere, you know, then this is what happens. And when an American sailor or anybody has to pay $50 for a steak dinner in 1978, that currency, it's out of whack with the rest of the world. And there has to be some reconciliation. And that the universe's need to reconcile that thing is greater than the power of seven nations. There you go. So
there you are.
There you go. Seven governments could not stand against the forces of nature that said, whoa, this is out of whack, we got to fix it.
Right. So consider, here's my point. Obviously you know my point. Think a little more carefully when you say things like, you know, the market went down to this number, and then the floor guys ran it up to here, and they took out all the stops. Or the floor guys did this, and the floor guys did that. You want to try being a floor guy? Why don't you go down there sometime and try being a floor guy? It's electronic trading now, but let's see how much fun it is to run the market up and down as a floor guy. Bring some of your buddies. Bring like 20 of your friends, and they all have a nice little amount of money, and you guys all together decide to run the stops. And I'll be there with you. And we'll
see. That whole conversation, I know it mystifies me. I hear it from people all the time about, oh, the big boys, and yeah, we got, you know, they got the numbers before the market opens, and yeah, and I'm going to trade with the big boys, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, and they're gonna run it up so they can dump it. Okay, wait a minute. They're going to run it up. That means they're going to buy it all the way up so they can sell it. Well, wait a minute. That's what I do. I buy it so that it may go higher that I can sell it.
Yeah.
But, I mean...
You're not a big boy.
I'm not a big boy.
No. The forces of nature, which is actually a good way of putting it, run the market. And the people that are in the pit and the people that are on the outside loops, like the bigger investors and all these people, everyone else, all of us, the whole business of it, is all under larger forces. We're all being acted upon by larger forces. And there are going to be coincidental times where somebody can buy the market and it reverses right there and suddenly goes shooting up, very similar to like what crude did in this trade that we recently put out. Does that mean, you could look at me and say, or you could look at, if I was a big investment group, and say, well, yeah, that, you know, the Williams Investment Group forced the market up. No, but we really didn't. We just timed the market properly, and the market went up. We didn't make it go up. I didn't buy billions of dollars worth of silver to make, or crude to make the market go up. So the market can move, it can be timed, and it can certainly look like the big boys turned around and did it right there. But I don't know what the big boys are planning. I don't know, maybe, why weren't there a whole bunch of big boys there to short the market and make the market go down, you know, off the bottom, or all that stuff. The bottom line is there's something very wrong with that idea, but people are very comfortable thinking in those terms, that, you know, somebody else is in control of this, I'm just a little guy, and they're running it around. And I'm hoping that if you look at enough of these forecasts, those forecasts are not based upon what the big boys want to do. they're in many cases, you know, obviously in all cases, we don't know what the big boys are. I don't even know who the big boys are. I know a guy that trades 10 to 15,000 E-mini contracts a day, probably significantly more than most floor traders would ever do. He's a one guy that does it. And he can't move the market. He doesn't stand a chance in moving the market. And he'll put on positions in huge sizes. And Mike Dwayne knows him as well. He's been on the radio program before. He sat in my office with me and traded for several weeks at a time. So, and I just spoke to him the other day. Anyway, bottom line is that I don't believe that. I don't believe there's evidence. And I'm the amazing Randy when it comes to I'll pay somebody else out $1,000. There's my reward. If you can show me proof, like I'm showing you, that I have evidence that it doesn't work that way. And I haven't met anybody yet that has evidence that it does work that way, that these big guys, including governments, come in and just manipulate things and tell it where to go.
Well, I will say this. All of this this POMO, this buying of the treasuries by the Fed with imaginary money, I would say that has something to do with the fact that we've been in an uptrend now for, since they started.
Dwayne, all kinds of things may have something to do with the fact that we've been in an uptrend for 24 months.
I mean, they poured trillions of dollars into. I mean, when you put trillions of dollars into something, something better happen, or it really is broken. I mean, that's simple cause and effect.
I don't know that it's broken. I just know that it's operating on much bigger scales than even governments. We went over the seven government thing with the Japanese yen. The scale that which markets work on is extremely, practically unfathomable, what really is going on. There are moments in any market where it gets quiet and a small number of people can make the blip happen and all that stuff, but in the big, big picture, you're not going to be running the market around. And the people who run these big funds, they know that better than anybody because they've learned their lesson by losing large sums of money. George Soros can't go into a market. He's got a $4 billion or $3 billion fund, and he can't go into the market and make it go up or make it go down. He has to be right about where it's already going in order to be right about it. Warren Buffett couldn't make the silver market go up, et cetera. And there's plenty of examples. I mean, it's just history is littered with it. If you're on the wrong side of this thing, which is bigger than, you know, any of these forces, it's a force of nature, you're going to get taken out. And that's just the nature of the beast. But it does, like I said before, it seems like there's a need for people to say that this is a person, this is a certain group, a certain something that's making these things happen. And I'll believe that as soon as I have the real evidence, put in front of me. I have evidence that that's not the case, and I will wait and see if somebody can come up with some evidence that that is the case. I'm not talking theoretical. I'm talking about factual. Here's a guy that did it, just like I'm pointing out. Here's a guy that everybody knew bought, Warren Buffett, and all of his followers, and it didn't do a darn thing to silver. And silver isn't the most liquid market, by the way, either. It's not like silver is as liquid as, T-bills or the stock market. It's nowhere near as liquid as that. Nowhere near. And one of the arguments is that when it's not liquid, the big boys can push it around. Well, it's not liquid. It's not very liquid. And yet, you know, billions of dollars from him didn't do it. So think about that. And it's just get the idea. Here's the bigger picture for me is get that idea out of your head. The better way to trade is to figure out a little bit more about how the market works and try to trade in concert with what it's doing. That's a better way to trade, rather than to worry yourself over the fact that, you know, all the things that we've said, that they're running it up, they're running it down. Maybe you just say it for the knack of it, but I've grown tired after 20 years of hearing people say what they are doing, and the they is never really brought out in front of you directly, and you can never really prove that. You know, when the market was crashing from 1,500 on the S&P down to 600 on the S&P, I didn't see the government step in, even though they spent trillions of dollars in stimulus. I didn't see any of the stuff you were just mentioning, Dwayne, stop the market from cutting itself almost more, you know, in a half and a half again. Remember the S&P was up at 1,500?
Mm-hmm.
Six divides into 1,500 two and a half times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, looked pretty scary. Government's right there. Government's spending money, printing money, doing all this stuff. Didn't stop the market from losing two and a half times its value.
Well, that was the plan.
Now there you go. That's the plan. now I'm on the other side of that. Well, okay. That's the listen. I'm going to rename conspirators to foregone conclusionists. That's what the business card has to say. Foregone conclusionist. Anyway, I've ranted long enough about this. I used to joke about conspiracy theory things. I wanted my own conspiracy theory card that just simply said David Williams, conspiracy theorist, and then under that it says, you may be following me. Because I'm already, that's already have a conspiracy. I'm handing you the card. All right, you just had to be there. Dwayne, you got to give me a little signal, a little laugh. I mean, it's not that.
I'm laughing.
Pretty funny. Okay.
I guess I need to turn up my volume. I was laughing.
All right. Anyway, so thanks for tolerating my rant about that. I've been hearing that stuff for years. I believed it at one point, and I'm just, you know, I've seen too much evidence of the contrary. You know, it goes back to that whole thing with the presidents and the black helicopters and all the other stuff. It goes on and on and on. The airplanes that are jumping in the
There you go.
All right. Well, Dwayne, I think for today that's about it.
Okay.
We've made some decent money in the crude, and Alan made some money on the downside in Euro. I'm glad to see that, and we're doing nothing in the S&P right here. So we'll wait until tomorrow and see if we can put some together, unless you have anything else for me.
I got nothing.
Oh, okay.
Got absolutely nothing. We're at 1289. All right. We hit 1289 on the ES. On the 10,000 contract chart, we printed dynamic resistance. We pulled right back to where we would expect to pull back, get another bounce, and then so it's just tightening up here. We should get a move. We will get a move in one direction or the other before the bell. It's trying to move higher. So you may get your chance, David Williams, to sell that 1294.
We just may. You just never know. I hope we do. It's been a quiet couple of days here in the S&P. That's what the value of these other markets are, is that there's other things to do. So, okay, well, Dwayne, listen, everybody, thank
you. Two people asked this question, so let me just...
Okay.
Two people have said they really want to come to the seminar, but they can't because of something they have going on in June. One's got a wedding, one's got something else. Will there be another seminar after June?
We don't have anyone planned right at this time. It would be nice, I know, and you know, it's difficult because if you do have plans already, it's hard to break those, and you have family matters and things like that that come up, and you don't want to anger your wife and, you know, all these things. With a lot of people, I've noticed, I just want to say this, and then I'll address it. Just people I talk to, we talk to a lot of people every day, and a lot of times the market is not something that the wives look fondly at. They really, in many cases, don't care, or they just tolerate it. And then if that begins to encroach upon, you know, other areas of their life, like traveling or having plans and stuff, then it can really, you know, upset people. It is nice to have somebody in your life that is supportive of what you're doing, and I hope that the people that are listening have some of that, because it actually is difficult to live in that situation, isn't it, when, you know, you're really interested in something and somebody doesn't support it. Support doesn't mean they have to, you know, finance your trading activities or whatever, but just know that this is something that you like and they appreciate that and, you know, they work with you. Having said that, I totally understand that if you have already plans in progress, that you can't change it, and I wouldn't want you to anger people and change it. I would love to, let me put it this way. We don't have another one planned right now. We still are seeing demand for it, and we're not advertising it other than that one thing on our site, and we will do another webinar. If things work out, we'll have a further one after that. But originally, we intended on having one, and that's the one that's coming up this weekend, and then we accidentally, we didn't manage it properly. We had more people, and we had to do the June 4th, June 5th. If I could ask those people to make sure that they're on our mailing list, you know, getting on the free nightly report, then they'll be notified when we have, if we do a third one, that they can come to. And I'd love to have you learn it. I know that this radio program attracts people who are technical of nature. You know, Dwayne's systems are technical, ours are technical, and there's a lot to be said for technical work. So I'd love to have you there. if you can't make it in June, and we do have some seats available. I don't know the number, but we do have some seats available for June right now. And, you know, those will, you know, if your situation changed, those may be available to you. But we'll let you know if we do have a third one, and you can come there. I would love to have you. I love the fact that you have the interest, and I'd love to see your face when you get it and understand it. And we'll work with you until, you know, I'll let you know if we have a third one. We'll go from there.
BJ says, I have a very supportive wife, but my nephew refuses to change his wedding date. So, there you go.
Well, there you are. No, that's a great excuse. Wedding is a good one. Okay, you're excused from the June 4th, June 5th with Elective Wave Seminar. You can go to that wedding.
All right, one final question from Lynn, because I always like to share Lynn's questions, because Lynn is a great thinker. And
he's a technical man.
And he's calling you on this one. He says, David, do you not see any cahoots or alliance with any of the trading houses in regards to the markets and direction? I think you just spent a half hour saying no, but...
Well, I understand his question on one level, but I'm not sure I understand it well enough. He means, do I not see that the trading houses are working together to make the market go in one direction or another? I guess that's what he's saying. And my answer would be, let's say they are. Let's say they're all doing that together. We have plenty of evidence out there that shows that that kind of big money doesn't necessarily move the markets. And so there's plenty of people that are in cahoots as well to try to move the markets. I'm sure there are fund managers for big funds that know each other, and they both want to, you know, they're both feeling bullish on the market, and they want to try to pop the market up, whatever their market is, and maybe both those funds conspire, as Lynn is saying, to get together to buy at a certain time and to really make the market move.
Here's my thought. One of the other listeners, he said, well, Cramer has spoken of hedge fund manipulation on several occasions, because Cramer likes to brag that he used to be, you know, the hedge fund and how they used to manipulate the market. But what Cramer is referring to and what everyone should take note of is, can hedge funds manipulate a market? Yes, in one stock or in two stocks or in three stocks. Is it possible to manipulate what's happening in an individual company? Yes, yes, 100,000 times yes. It happens every day, day in, day out. However, when you go to something like that is as big as the Japanese yen, or something that is as big as the S&P 500, you're talking about 500 different companies. Can one hedge fund or a group of hedge funds drive the entire 500 individual companies, all different business models, different funding, different revenue streams, different ideas, different corporate cultures? Can a group of fund managers conspire to drive down the entire S&P 500? I don't think so.
Well,
can they run
finally,
one company into the ground? Absolutely, they do it every day.
I don't know. I'm not even sure that that's the case.
Yeah, I really am not.
It really comes down to, I think, ultimately, it's almost like a religion. It comes down to a belief, a set of beliefs, a worldview, for an example. That's what it really comes down to. If your worldview is that there is, you know, in some way a small number of people that are controlling everything and keep pulling off these Mona Lisa conspiracies and everything's perfect, you know, and no one can ever get busted and they really are smart and, you know, you can't even get up and go to the bathroom from where you are and know exactly what's going to happen on the way to the bathroom and get it exactly right. But these people put together these multi-tiered, triple-level chess game scenarios where everything works out perfectly, where there's all kinds of different players that never speak, they never talk, they never write a book, they never defect, and it's all perfect all the time. And I don't believe in that, obviously. I don't believe in that world outlook. I believe there are people who want to do that. I believe there's conspiracies of all kinds being attempted, and some of them are successful for a period of time, and some of them... But that worldview is sort of like a religion, and I don't believe in that. I don't have evidence that people can pull off that kind of thing. And I've said this before, you know, you've got Richard Nixon who couldn't even break in. He had the black helicopters. He had all the tricky stuff. He had the people in the black SUVs. He had everything he needed, but he couldn't pull off breaking into the Waldorf Hotel and stealing something, and some two little reporters, instead of those reporters being killed by the black helicopters, they got the story out, and you know, the guy lost his presidency over it. President Kennedy or Kennedy, he couldn't have that event. He was the most powerful family in the world at the time of Chappaquiddick, and the girl went under. He tried to hide that, and it's the most. It got out all over the world. The black helicopters, the special forces, everything to cover up, to kill everybody that knew, all of that didn't do anything. Bill Clinton couldn't have a little fun in the White House. He had everything at his disposal, but yet the entire world knows what happened in the White House. These are prime facts
yet,
that you can see.
Yet you, David Williams, can tell us when the market's going to turn.
Well, I have the real black helicopters. And I've got the real guys in the black suits. That's what I'm saying. These people don't have it. I have got this. I've got it under control now. No, it's a worldview. It's almost like a religion. And ultimately, it's not, listen, for Lynn and for anybody else who's listening to me, this is not for you to be angry at me if I happen to be against your particular belief. And I am not angry, really, at you for your belief. Ultimately, you can't absolutely prove it one way or the other. I can't absolutely prove that it isn't happening. And you can't absolutely prove that it is happening. It really is sort of a choice of a world view. But if you look at your own life and the life of people around you, it's very hard to predict from one moment to the next anything, let alone layer these huge, huge things out. After the fact, you can look back and say, well, here's what they did, and here's why they did it, here's how it worked out perfectly, and all that. But in real time, it's extremely difficult. And another example, and I know I've been going on here, and I'm sorry, but the markets are really quiet right now. Maybe we can just take another minute of this. We have 10,000 prosecutors all over the United States that are constantly getting all these people into court, people who are conspiring to murder, people who have murdered, people who are conspiring to rob banks or have robbed banks, people who are selling drugs or selling drugs through the mail. I mean, just think of all the crimes that everybody's doing, and think of how many prosecutors are bringing people to court every day. It's in the millions. I mean, it's just zillions of people are being busted all the time. Mm-hmm. All those people, they can never pull off anything. They can't get anything without getting busted. You see these TV shows where the guy commits a crime 30 years ago, and then they bring out the old box and some papers, and before you know it, they're ding-donging on his door, and they've got the guy.
That's a great show.
He didn't get away with it. So all of these people every day are trying to pull off the Mona Lisa conspiracy that I am to believe, we're all to believe, that all these other special people in the government, the government's filled with completely inept people. Where did you get the idea? Take a look at the government. Look at what it does. Look at the buffoonery. Look at the bad mistakes. Look at they can't even run the frickin' post office. They can't do anything right. And yet you want me to look to the government saying that's where these special people hide or behind the government that pull off these Mona Lisa conspiracies while every day in America tens of thousands of people are busted trying to pull off even tiny ones and prosecutors are nailing them, taking them to court, and putting them in the jail. So
you're saying Will Smith does not work for the government?
Will Smith does work for the government. He's actually a paid government informant. No, that's what I'm saying. I'm just giving you arguments to consider the other side. That's all I'm really giving you here. The evidence is overwhelming to me that not only the average person, but even very, very sophisticated, bright people who try to commit crimes get busted every single day, and they're brought to courts. We have zillions of courts, zillions of prosecutors. On top of that, we have zillions of investigative reporters, the same kind of people that are out there that busted Nixon and got Clinton and on and John Edwards and on and on and on. None of these people can hide it, but there's always another group that can do it perfectly, and they're somewhere behind the government and all that. It's something to consider. You know, the facts don't seem to be on the side of people who believe that stuff. So, ultimately, it's a worldview and it's a choice of looking at things, of how you want to look at things, and I think that's really the end result of it. So, I can be great friends with, I have great friends who are conspiratorial people who believe that all this stuff is going on, and, you know, they happen to believe that way. I happen to like them for other reasons. I just don't happen to believe in that particular part of their personality. And even though I may speak well, I'm not always right. I may be dead wrong on this, but that's my evidence, you know, as best as I can present it. Thank you very much for having me here today.
And yes, Rob, you're correct. It was Watergate and not the Waldorf.
Oh, sorry.
Honestly, David was thinking about his lunch already.
Holder, yeah. So. I was frenzied there. Yeah, the Watergate Hotel. That's why they called it Watergate. So, yeah, he lost his presidency over trying to break into a, what was that? A hotel room. That's a tough one. He's got the full faith and credit of the black ops and everything else behind him, and he couldn't quite pull that off. And two little bungling reporters, investigative reporters, nailed him, and they got it to the presses before they all got killed and buried. You know, what about the guy who cured cancer? I've got a great friend of mine who absolutely believes that cancer has been 100% cured, and that the guy that cured it even wrote a book, and some of you may know what that book is. And so he says, yeah, he wrote the book, and in the book, he said, I may be killed. And later, the guy died. Either he was killed or he died. I don't know what happened to him. So that really, really sealed the deal for this guy.
Well, the same thing happened to the guy that created the engine that runs on water.
Yeah, but just a second, hold on. So he did put he wrote the book to make sure it got out there. Can I get the book? I'd like to see the cure for cancer, since there's about 10,000 different kinds of cancer. I'd like to open the book to the page that says, here's the cure for cancer. Can I get the book? Oh, no. The book was out for a while, but now they've stopped allowing the book out because the book had the cure for cancer.
Oh, no, I get the
okay.
cure. I get it.
You have the book? Okay.
I'll send you a copy.
Yeah. And the fact that there's 10,000 different researchers investigating all the different kinds of cancer, as soon as one of them figures out that secret, the helicopters land, he gets paid off, he lives in the Bahamas for the rest of his life while thousands of people die of cancer, and he just has a great old life. And he never talks or writes a book. Or he's killed. And that's how it goes. And the truth of the matter is that that's a bunch of nonsense. There's people all over the world, very, very bright people, working very, very hard to try to cure cancer. Cancer is a force of nature, just like the markets are a force of nature. There's no small little task on solving it. This stuff has been around for a long time, and they have made some progress. But it's very, very complicated, and you can say the argument, yeah, well, if they had the cure for it, they wouldn't put it out because the cancer industry makes too much money. Yeah, I believe that. The cancer industry makes tons of money, but it would get out. And in this day and age, with the Internet and with everything that gets out on the Internet, you can't even – what you had for breakfast is on the Internet somewhere. So now it's even harder to pull off a conspiracy than it ever was before because everything's on the Internet, including cameras watching you go in and out of stores and all that stuff. It's gotten 10 times harder to pull off a good conspiracy because it all gets on the Internet now. And so the cure for cancer should be somewhere on the Internet since that book was out there. But I never get to see that book, and the researchers, whoever saw it, you know, it didn't seem to work too well because it still is a really big problem.
You just
have
to keep your body in an alkaline state. Don't let it get too acidic, and you'll be okay.
There you go. So just think a little bit through these things, that's all. I mean, I want people to like me in spite of my harsh opinions. And with that, Dwayne, I'd like to get on with my life.
Okay.
Today.
Please do.
So, thank you for your patience today, everybody, for listening to it. I hope it's entertaining at the very least.
It is. It's got to be.
I will plan on talking with you tomorrow. We may have another couple setups in the trades. So.
Thanks, David.
Okay,
good.
Anyway, thanks very much.
All right, bye-bye.
I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
All right, guys, that is going to do it. Once again, we've under-promised, over-delivered. You got an hour and 48 minutes of the best Internet radio that we could possibly bring to your computer. We're trading 1289.50 on the S&P E-mini. David talked about the potential for 1290. We talked about the potential for 1294. We drew this little trend line here, and we said, you know, it could be resistance, or maybe not. As we can see, it closed above the trend line. I like trading a break better than a hold, but that's just my own personal preference. Some people prefer the hold. Okay, I kind of like the break. Now, where do we go from here? Well, this area up here, we couldn't take it out Monday. We couldn't take it out Tuesday. If we get a run, watch this area. Again, getting short in this area, you know, maybe you end up being on the wrong side of the trade. But 5 hourly pushes say that nobody so far this week has wanted to own this at a higher price. So maybe you get short here, and maybe end up on the wrong side of the trade, so you take a reasonable stop. If, on the other hand, you take a short here, and you end up on the right side of the trade, well, I got my eye on this number, so that's all. Just saying. 1244/45. Well, we're at 91 already, and we could see 94 here before I can play the jingle on the way out the door. But that is it. I'm going to wrap it. Thank you so much for tuning in, whoever you are, wherever you are. May God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Pastor Dwayne Reeves, and his guests. This information should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed security broker or financial planner before making any investment decisions. You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.